And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking.
Where were we?
Where were we? We were elsewhere.
We were not
podcasting. Right. Now we're podcasting again. And better than that, they're back to listening to the finest road racing motorcycle podcast.
They actually never stopped. They just go back to number one.
And they just
they don't have a life at all.
Just sit at the computer.
They're just batteries.
Just crying, waiting for the next one to drop. Ooh, I hate that.
You guys need a life.
They have a life. It just involves
you
and I.
It involves you and us, yeah.
Oh, my God. What a disaster. It's Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast that is written into your genetic code. He's Ed Sorbo.
That was good. Number 63. Don't knock my coffee over.
Yes, just decaf. It'll be cool. He's Ed Sorbo from Lindemann Engineering. You can find him on the web at le-suspension.com. And I am Michael Gugis. You can find me on the web at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. And you can find me various racetracks, you know, hanging out.
Parked at the apex, as you say.
I like to say parked at the apex, you know. No, braking way too early. That's the other thing I like to do. I like to do that way too early. Damn, man, you know it's an old bike, but God damn it, it's fast. You know, I'm sorry.
Brian Drebber.
Why do you want to talk about Brian Drebber?
The Lindemann Engineering B warming station.
Yes, that was pretty cool.
So I did a Facebook post. It's on my Lindemann site also. So you saw it on Lindemann.
Yeah.
And there was a bee drowned in Tiki's water bowl right there.
Drowned.
And so I was paying attention because earlier I had seen a bee, maybe the same one. They all have the same stripes. Flying around close to the water.
Clearly, you can't identify individual bees.
No, I can't. Hey, knock it off with the coffee whacking. And it looked like the bee wanted to drink water, but was afraid to get down there and fall in off the slippery slides of the bowl.
Right.
So I put a blue paper shop towel on half the water for it, and then it walked on the side of the bowl and drank water.
Wow.
And they got that long thing that they stick out of their nose,
proboscis,
tongue, whatever thing. Yeah, to drink. It was pretty cool. And flew away. Well, then, so an hour later, I come back. There's a dead bee in the water. I'm like, damn it. But I fished the bee out just in case, and it started twitching. So I put it underneath the bee warming station, and came back to life, and it was nighttime. So I closed the doors of the shop, stayed bee hung out inside, and then flew out in the morning. And I did a post.
Right.
It turns out I called the bee, as you saw, this guy.
Ah, female.
They're females. I thought the workers were men, and they only had one female, the queen. But it turns out the drones, are only around for sex. And then they get rid of them.
This is why.
And everything else is female.
This is why.
And so Brian Drebber corrected me on Facebook, but check it out. He's like a beekeeper extraordinaire.
Yeah.
He has the first
fancy beekeeping station. You'd be shocked at how many people do this.
It looks like an apartment building for bees. You can see the picture on my Facebook page, folks.
No, it really
is.
Cool.
Yeah, right? And the more bees you help, the better things are.
You know what? I want to be a lion.
Why do you want to be a lion?
From what I've read. Okay. Mm-hmm.
You sleep around
20 hours a day.
The women do all the work.
20 hours a day of sleep.
Yep.
Okay. And you know what, Ed? I'm getting older. I mean, granted, the sex is good. Having people bring you food is good. But the 20 hours a day of sleeping a day, I got to tell you, that kind of appeals to me.
The next April 1st,
yes,
you see somebody you know,
right,
and you give them a piece of paper that says, hey, this guy calling, trying to reach you. And your written name, you write L.IN. And you give the phone number for the local zoo.
Okay.
Mr. L. Ian called for you.
Geez.
And then you need to call him back. So he's going to call up, and then the zoo's going to answer. I'm trying to reach Mr. L. Ian, right? That'd be pretty good.
Nope. Here's April Fools. Somebody looks at you and says, you look familiar. You look at him straight in the eye and go, I do porn.
But it's true. Speaking of porn.
But not the kind of porn you do. Oh, go ahead.
I was watching...
Now we're on to something here. Motorcycles.
I was watching the testing at Sepang, MotoGP testing on my MotoGP pass. That's like as good as porn.
Right.
Although 8 hours of porn is too much.
You know
I
what?
Can't
After
watch
a
it
while,
straight
it's
through.
Like there's only so many holes.
There's
right?
only so
you
much
know,
you can
so
do.
Many, exactly.
Been
right?
done before in that other show.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's like, yeah. Oh God, did you ever see the story on the Onion website? Nation demands new orifice.
I love the Onion. Those guys are geniuses.
No, that was hysterical, man.
But wait, there's more.
Right, so I was out in Rancho Mirage this weekend with my family. We have a family friend who has a house out there. He rents it out, lets people use it for a little vacation getaways,
People know more than one Gouges, and they'll still be friends with you guys?
Oh, you should, dude.
Holy smokes.
Let me put it this way. We drove out there in the van.
Like, the only reason I can put up with you is because you're married to Sandy, and she's, like, from a different gene pool.
Totally hot.
Right?
We came back in the van, no fatalities. I was pretty pleased about that. So, the heater in the pool goes out. Okay, pool guy comes by this morning. They installed it yesterday. Comes back by this morning. I'm going out for my morning run. I walk out as he's walking out, and he's got a flat black 1991 GSXR 1100. I look at it. It's safety wired. Shake his hand. Where'd you race? He goes, Willow Springs, Las Vegas. It was totally cool. He raced that bike. And then he...
driving it to pool jobs.
Now he drives it to pool jobs. His around... Check this out. One of the great things about being a pool guy, not what you're thinking, that has nothing to do with porn. Well, it does, kind of. Because one of the things you get to do is you go to people's backyards and their garages, right? So he's in somebody's garage one day, and they're like, there's a Honda 354 sitting in there. And he asked the person, what are you going to do with that? They're like, I don't know. It's been sitting there for years. Take it.
Oh, man.
It's stock upholstery. The thing is so stock. Yeah. Can you believe that?
Yeah,
How cool is that?
That's one thing that myself and all my friends in Hawaii are pining for.
Good.
There's no pristine old automobiles in a place surrounded by a fucking ocean.
Salt water, right? Exactly. Yeah, I don't know. You don't want to do that. And I'm a genius.
Yeah, we know that.
but wait, here's why.
Okay.
It hasn't been confirmed yet, but IOTA apparently is not going to be racing a MotoGP this year. There's a number of things that go along with this. Dorna probably wants the grid spots that they have so they can sell them to somebody else. But here's what I think happened, because what they're probably going to do...
Well, remind us which team IOTA was. Who was the rider and what was the bike?
Who knows? That's how bad they were. No, they were like, you know, behind the customer Hondas. I think maybe Alex DeAngelis... I really don't even remember.
Okay.
It was like they would somehow manage to finish 26th out of 24 riders. Okay, they were that slow.
Be nice.
Anyway.
Right, because the rider on that bike laps everybody at your track day.
Oh, yeah, right.
82 times.
Right, while riding backwards with one hand. Okay, but so they're likely going to go to World Superbike with Aprilia.
Okay.
And it was...
I can put a check mark.
Yeah, check mark.
Exactly. Okay.
This is what I'm pretty sure happened, because I think they were running Aprilias in MotoGP.
Okay, you don't know who their rider is, but you're pretty sure you know what happened here.
Almost certain. Okay,
got it.
Pretty sure they were running Aprilias in MotoGP, and they called the factory for 2016. They were going, we are spending $400,000 per bike, maybe more, and getting our asses beaten. We got to do something about the price. And Aprilia said, screw you, pal. You don't want to pay for it. You don't get it. Maybe you want to just go race World Superbike. And this is where the genius of me comes in. Because I have readers in Italy. And somebody read motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com.
That's the thing about the internet. It goes everywhere.
Clicked on the link to the Aprilia Superbike customer thing and went, holy crap, we can buy five of these for the price of one of these shit MotoGP bikes. And so when you see the IOTA team on the World Superbike grid on competitive bikes this year, you're welcome. What do you got, Ed?
Well, that brings up another point, right?
God, I hope so.
Yeah, that's the thing with us. So MotoGP is the premier level, and it's ridiculously expensive. World Superbike is significantly less expensive, but a pretty decent amount of coverage. You know,
the great coverage.
There's plenty of people who think Superbike is more serious than MotoGP.
It's,
you know,
yeah.
So you have a tiered system.
Yeah.
Whether it was, I mean, these guys aren't smart enough to have it totally by design. It kind of worked out that way. But hey, worked out that way is good enough. You know,
it's
kind of how evolution works.
This is where I am genius number two. I've always said that
I'm genius one.
No, this is genius part number two, Gouges related. This just in 3 minutes of this podcast.
So 2.1.
2.8, whatever. Where was I going with this? Right, I remember. I had always said if you want a bunch of manufacturers involved, you have to give them multiple tiers, multiple playgrounds to play in. That's exactly what worked. Kawasaki looked at MotoGP and went, no way. We are not spending that kind of money. World Superbike, they spend a fraction of it.
That's the conclusion we draw, right? Kawasaki might not even have looked. They might not even considered it.
They've made it very clear because they used to be in it. Remember the Hayate with Marco
Belandri? Well, yeah, they used to be in it, but
yeah, they went.
So speaking of MotoGP,
20%. 20% of the MotoGP budget.
So point number one from the MotoGP tests at Sepang.
Are we going there? We're not going to get the other stuff? Okay, that's fine. Go ahead.
We want to keep this timely. These other things we can talk about anytime.
Yeah, good point.
Right?
Okay, good point.
So point number one, Lynn Jarvis for UN director.
Right, exactly.
That guy is the quintessential.
Ice in his veins.
He is a diplomat, blown away.
Dude, I'll bet you could put him on the bike and he'd be like, yep, no problem. My God, absolutely. What is going to upset him? And that's why... Well, I don't want to rehash old news. Never mind. But yeah,
he did a perfect job talking about. This is from an interview he did at the Sepang test, and you know, like what was one of his really good answers was, "Our riders are their strongest competition," or something like that. Right? You know,
right.
The guy was trying to ask, you know, are they going to be able to get along?
Right. Exactly.
It was really well done. And one thing that he said that I really was interested by that was a great question asked. And it's something we've talked about. If you clearly have the best all-around bike,
right?
What do you do? Like, change the paint, right? You don't screw with it. Except at this level, you can't, like, rest on your laurels because those other guys are working really hard and they're really smart, too. And he had a great answer for that. He said, well, fortunately for us, this year, nobody can rest because we have different tires and different software. Mm-hmm. It's forcing us to be creative no matter what. And then beyond that, they're going to be evolutionary with their bike. They're not going to make big changes. And
Absolutely.
Some specific stuff, he didn't talk about it, but Lorenzo and Rossi did. The gas tank, part of the gas tank at the far back of the bike was... when they were first with the Michelins and the Michelin rear was super, super good and the front wasn't so good, that was a way to put weight on the rear and try to deal with that. Now at this test, they came with three kinds of bikes.
A much
better. Hybrid bike, which is the new bike with the old style gas tank, and then the full-on 16, which was the 16 with the gas tank in the back. And Michelin's front tire woes have been solved. And so they both are running the conventional gas tank, Rossi and Lorenzo.
Right.
So, you know, that his answer, and then what was actually going on all fit together perfectly. And that is one of those cases where I think we can say, okay, fact.
Yeah.
Whereas everything else, especially in a test, you never really know what the guys are really up to. Like, what was Crutchlow's job this weekend? He's on the same old bike.
Right.
So clearly he's learning about the tires and he's learning about the electronics.
He got the 2016 engine on the last day.
Okay, right? Okay. So
they're all test fields.
They're all doing different things. Right. They have enough guys that they can, you're going to focus on that, but you also, of course, do this thing that you need to do, and you're going to focus on that other thing, and you're going to also, you're going to do this thing that you need,
Right.
And so you can't look at them like we can in a race and go, well, they're all trying to win, therefore...
Right.
Right. They're trying as hard as they can.
There's a reason. There's a reason that the Ducati, the GP15, was quicker than the 16.
Yeah, they got more experience.
That one's all sorted out.
The bugs.
But and that's
not only that, sorted out at that track.
Yeah.
Right, where the new bike is just all new.
All brand new. But that leads you to Yamaha. Their approach has always been evolutionary.
Yeah, it has
And we've talked about that a lot. But here's one of your dangers, and here's one of your potential downsides. The bike was great last year. It was good enough to win, when the title going away. So, actually, it's not true. It's about 11 wins to 7 wins. It's not hardly an ass-kicking.
Yeah, The only reason it looks like an ass-kicking is because what Marquez did in 2014, the bar was too high. This was a lot more of a realistic season.
That leads to the next point I want to talk to you, but let me finish this first. Your problem is that I think one of Yamaha's potential problems is that the 2015 was so good and the riders were so dialed in on it. I mean, you watched Lorenzo. It looked like he was on a different planet. So it's hard to get that guy to give up that bike. He's like, this is perfect. And it's like, nothing's perfect in this world. You have to keep moving forward. And you have to make mistakes occasionally. And he's like, I don't want to make any mistakes. So the question is, you could take an evolutionary approach. And it works really well to get a very very rider and user-friendly bike. That's why Crutchlow called the M1, the Yamaha, when he wrote it, they called it the PlayStation bike. It was like playing a video game. It was that easy.
M1, right.
Yeah, that easy to ride. It was that easy to ride. But, you know, sometimes evolution doesn't quite cut it.
Yeah, except your money's got to be on Yamaha this year.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on.
I mean, I
don't know if you noticed this, but Lorenzo was a second faster than the field on day one, and then a second faster at the end
and
also.
All of that is true.
And he did that time on the hard tire
and
in the heat.
Nobody, and as I pointed out in my blog, motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com, nobody would have put money on Lotus on that in that year that they came out with the wing side pods. And three races in, everybody's redesigning their cars.
Okay,
you know?
Honda. So all the people that were saying what was wrong with Honda's bike last year were saying that it was the crank's not heavy enough.
Okay.
Okay? They're wrong.
Okay.
You want to know why?
Why?
My proof is that if it was that simple, then it would be fixed.
Right.
Right? Clearly, Pedroza and Marquez were not happy at this event. They were working hard. They were definitely working and trying to figure stuff out.
Right.
But it wasn't like, oh, we have magic again.
No, no.
You know? So if it was that simple that it was just the crankshaft weight, Honda could have fucking put a flywheel on it and fixed it.
Okay.
And they would have done that, actually, at the test at the end of the year.
Could have.
Right?
Yeah, they could have pulled that engine out of the crate.
So it's something more complicated.
And
it was really interesting to see the expression on Pedroza's face. He was really serious, really, you know, working hard. And, you know, and Marquez was very quiet.
Pedroza's been here before.
And I don't think this is a bad thing.
No.
I think Honda looked at this amount of time they have and the amount of testing that they have.
That's the extending the thinking
exactly.
to the last possible moment.
And they learned that from Ducati.
That
idea's been around for a long
McLaren.
Time. But I think what they decided is, look, at this first test, let's try our craziest shit.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Because
and gather data.
And we need the more.
Look, there's no. Well, hold on. Again, as I pointed out on motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com, the bike, okay, everybody says the Honda was shit. That shit bike won 7 races.
Yeah, no,
you know?
It's not.
So
shit.
you can't just throw the whole thing out. Then you wind up in Ducati land. You know, no offense to Ducati owners, okay, but you wind up, why throw out, you don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. You don't want to start over and wind up at a lower place than what you tried to fix.
On the other hand,
you don't want to improve the bike until it's worse.
Yeah, on the other hand, yeah.
Right?
On the other hand, Honda might be trying to find some magic thing that they had with Marquez before, and that could lead him down a blind alley.
No, here's.
I think the reason Pedroza looked less happy was that the bike is being made more for Marquez.
That might be
than for him.
That's arguing state of mind, counselor. I think that if I were guessing at state of mind, he's been here before. Pedroza's been with Honda long enough that he's gotten on the bike at the preseason test and looked at the time sheets and looked at everything and went, oh, we're in trouble for the first half of the season, but Honda will fix this for us. Now you can't fix things, and that's the scary thing, and that's messed up. I mean, you're going to know in 3 races pretty much how the rest of the season's going to turn out, and that's upsetting. You know, that really is. You can't fix it. Nobody can bring anything new. And because the motor is not just the motor, but it's the center of gravity, it's, you know, all of those things, it defines your frame design, all that stuff. You're locked into it, you're hosed.
Well, so, we're going to learn a lot about Honda at test
Phillip
number
Island.
2,
yes.
Which is pretty
An
soon.
Entirely different track.
It was 9 days after the testing, and that's another thing, a completely different.
Yeah.
Where are they going for the third test?
Oh, crap, where is it? Is it Valencia again? Yeah, I think they do a preseason test at Valencia.
So Michelin made a huge improvement to the front tire.
Yes.
And, you know, we were all kind of a little jumping to conclusions there, right? I mean, this is a huge multinational company with a ton of experience.
Right.
You know, what do we expect them to do? Show up at their first event with tires that were as good as the tires that the other guys who were working on for, right? With all the guys. And the only thing that at that test, everybody's like, wow, the rear tire is fantastic. The front's not so good. Or it's not as good, right? So now the front is as good.
Who are these people that were jumping to conclusions? And what conclusion were they jumping to?
That a lot of people, Yamaha, put a gas tank to the back half because of that kind of stuff. Every media place was happy to report how many front end crashes they had.
Right, and how different the Michelins were going to be, and da 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 da.
So, but I have no doubt that Michelin was going to have it worked out, but to go from the one test to the and have it that big of improvement. That's a good job. They deserve
they deserve credit for the change on the front. Now and the rear tire.
The rear so we're gonna say that there was a rear tire failure that nobody knows exactly what caused it. No, none of us know exactly what caused it.
I know
and
all things then.
You can draw whatever conclusion you want from that, but those conclusions will be based on belief rather than fact.
If it's true for me, it's true.
Yeah. So Suzuki was really interesting. As the crazy guys at Deep Thinking called it last year.
Right.
Pretty easy to have a bike that handles good when it's down slow. On power.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, the Suzuki guys apparently have more power, but now their bike's not handling so well.
And
where have we seen this before?
And that goes back to the Honda thing. You don't want to undo your advantages.
Well, in case of Suzuki, right, they have to. They didn't have an advantage. Their handling advantage got them pole position once.
Right, and it got and them. It got their riders pretty happy.
Get on, for one event. And they didn't get on the podium ever. They want more than that.
Right.
That was a great first year.
Right.
And it was wise to come in and have a good handling bike and have positive guys and do the stuff you know you can do for sure.
Right.
Even if it, okay, great. But now they have to have the power.
Right.
They have to have the top speed numbers. They have to run with the other guys. And that means, but they have this great foundation of what their bikes can do.
Right.
And now they are working towards a target as opposed to maybe the Honda guys don't know what they need to get to.
You know,
feel bad for the Suzuki guys. They're in a manageable position.
Well, we'll see. You know, we'll see how they're doing at Phillip Island. Phillip Island is a real test on how a bike handles.
Phillip Island should be much better for the Suzuki.
Yeah, should. It should be. That bike, have you noticed in World Superbike, bikes that win there and are on the podium there are sometimes not on the podium for the rest of the year. The bike shows up well-sorted. It doesn't have to be a rocket. It just has to handle really well. And that plays out. That works out. Aprilia won at Phillip Island last year and then didn't win again until Qatar, the last race of the season on World Superbike. So I think the Phillip Island test is going to tell us a lot. You know, I'll go back to one thing more about the Honda and how lost they might actually be. When you look at Pedrosa and Marquez in 2013 and 14, okay, that bike was not a lot of fun to ride, and the satellite bike was awful. So maybe there's something fundamentally wrong with the bike, and they've just papered over it in the Casey using the Casey Stoner.
Well, they're the only
Stoner
guys.
Thing, right?
They're still using the five-cylinder engine, right?
No.
It's a V.
V4.
It's V4. A V4. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, that was only for the leader bikes. I don't know. Hey, how long is
what do you mean that was only? We're at 22, but remember we're...
Yeah, we're going long. Oh, that's right. 30. Hey, we got a letter from a listener. What's up, Aaron? Who said...
Our shows are too short.
Yeah, our shows are too short. They want to hear more deep thinking. Isn't that terrifying?
So the new base time now is 30 minutes.
30 minutes? I thought we were going to go 25.
I thought it was 30, and we were going to hope to end by 40.
We said 25, we'll hope to end by 40. Anyway.
So Ducati at the World MotoGP tests.
Right.
How many of them are there?
Like 40?
Yeah, there's a fleet.
It's a fleet of them. They rented a ship, man.
Like, I bet you the guys are in the pits and go, yeah, I passed this red bike. And then there was this red bike. And then a red bike passed me. Did you see the red bike?
It's the Ducati
Cup.
Jesus
Christ.
Right? They've got eight entries. In the field this year. And their manager, Gigi, pointed out, you know, we think that's going to be an advantage because we're going to have a pile of data
to work from. They definitely have data. How much data the GP14 is worth to them, I don't know.
Or the GP15? Yeah, good point. I mean, that's a really good point. And at what point does the data start to become overwhelming? You know, does data become... confusing internally?
I think there's some kind of financial thing that makes it good for them to have lots of bikes.
Believe me.
And that's what's really going on there.
Well, you know what? And here's the cool thing. We've talked a little bit about how to build grids and stuff like that. One of the things that used to happen that doesn't happen anymore with Honda and Yamaha is that you used to be able to run last year's bike and 2 year old's
bike. That's what Ducati's doing.
Yeah, that's what they're doing now. Remember,
it's not like the frames break or stress out. They're not airplanes.
There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with the bikes. They just go back to the crusher.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
Well, I think they go to museums in that case. So it's going to be with Ducati, there's just not enough data. You just have to wait and see, because you could say, oh, fuck, the 16, the new bike was slower. They're not calling it the 16 now. They're just calling it, they don't use the numbers anymore.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't.
When did that happen?
At the test. So it was 14, 15, whatever, then, and now it's just whatever the name of the thing is. I'm positive. They interviewed the Ducati guy, and I watched it.
Okay.
So anyway,
he said we don't call it 16.
Yes.
Okay.
So, but we can.
We're going to have to. We don't have any other.
So anyway, right? The new bike is not as good as last year's bike.
Right.
At the first test, yeah, like normal.
Right.
Exactly. Or the new bike is not good. I mean,
we don't know yet. We don't know. If same thing with Honda, we really don't know about Suzuki. You know, we don't know if that bike can be fixed, if they've taken a step backwards.
Yeah, it's like everybody showed up for a test weekend day, and Yamaha showed up for a race.
Yeah,
right.
Well, you know, but that's what they do, Ed. That's
well,
why
they all do that.
No, that's why. That's one of the things that makes Yamaha so good. As I pointed out on motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com.
I would have sang it with you, but I was drinking coffee. Yeah. You gotta pay attention to the visual cues.
Visual cues, hey. We got a face for radio. Yamaha goes racing solely to win. That's all they do. And you, like I said, you pointed out a number of things on the bike that make it easier to work on in the pit lane.
Those other bikes mostly have that too.
Yeah,
it's just it's obvious they're on the Yamaha. Happen to see them changing a seat. The other guys didn't change the seat.
No, but it's
Casey
it's,
Stoner.
There's a stall done. We're not quite done yet. I'm still on the beam. I'm not talking about redwood trees. No, the beam. I'm not talking about redwood trees. I am not talking about Doppler shifts. I'm talking about a Yamaha here. Okay. Now, where was I? Right, talking about a Yamaha. No, it's that evolutionary approach that we've talked about means that you're never going to be first to market with new technology. Like I asked you, when's the last time I called? Remember, I called you on the phone?
No, you sent me a text message.
And then I called you on the phone.
Maybe.
And then I texted you. And then there were as a carrier pigeon.
Might have been an email, too.
When's the last time you saw new technology show up on a Yamaha first? You're not going to win races if you do that.
You know, at the beginning of this podcast, and you can go back and listen to it later on.
Must I?
You were criticizing the evolutionary process.
No, I just
now said, you've got a soapbox and you're going on about it.
No. I just said that each approach has advantages and disadvantages.
Yes. Yep.
You know, and the advantage is that if your whole goal is to win races, then this is the way you go about it. And evolution is a very good way of going about winning races.
Googes has got some yin and yang going here.
Yeah, exactly.
So Casey Stoner.
Oh, what about him?
He looked like a happy camper.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Got to ride a really cool bike. Doesn't have to race. Nobody's all up in his business, you know. Just having a good time.
He was really clear and concise. I'm the tester. That's my job. I'm doing testing. I'm not going to race, yada, yada, yada.
And
it's fun to watch all the people post about how he's going to race. The guy just said he's not going to, and he doesn't want to.
He also said he'd never ride for Ducati again either. You know, who knows? And really, who cares? You know, it'd be great if he shows up. If he doesn't, he's having a good time. The thing, part of the reason I think he was so happy was they put him on the 15. Well-sorted, good, you know, as good handling as the Ducati was going to get.
He rode the 16 later on, too,
I think he spent almost all of his time on the 15, if not all of it. But, I mean, he was just out having fun. And that's, you know, this is the one thing.
I thought he did a perfect job as a tester.
This is the one thing he can do better than almost anybody else on the planet. I read an interview with Cal Crutchlow over on Crash.net, and he said, look, for sheer speed, there's only two people in my career that I've seen, and it's Marquez and Stoner. He said, everybody else is really good, don't get me wrong, you know, but he says, just for sheer crazy, oh my God, how are they doing that speed? It's those two. And so Casey gets to go test. He crashes a bike, so what? You know, right? It's not coming out of his paycheck. You know, they fly him around the world. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing bad about being the official tester.
You have a two-minute board?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, go.
Ready? Sam Verderico, I believe that's how the guy's name is pronounced. I could be entirely wrong. He's a racer out of Washington. He won the...
Washington State or D.C.?
Washington State. He won the Washington Motorcycle Road Racing Association overall plate last year on a stock M1. And when I mean stock, I'm sorry, stock R1M. And when I mean stock, it ran stock bodywork for the first four rounds. Taped up headlights, okay? There's a great photo of him wheeling, taped up headlights with his competition number on it. Anyway, the reason I mention him, I did an interview with him. It's a great interview. Look at it for look for it in an upcoming issue of Road Racing World. We were out at Club Speedway, you and I, a couple weeks ago. You know, tearing up knee pucks and having fun. And
I didn't drag my knee all weekend.
What? Well, you've been learning from shit, Andy Edwards.
Just winning my race class. Sorry.
Oh, excuse me. Where was I? Right. Oh, right. I'm knee deep in shit.
Dude, I saw your line. You're riding through turn one in the race.
That was terrifying.
Yeah, don't try to give me shit.
No. We had the we had the steering damper turned up way too high.
We.
And that was to keep it from wobbling when it went up on the banking, because the bars came out of my hands once. That was butt puckering. So then we cranked it up, and it was so just hard to turn it.
Turn at Auto Club Speedway.
Yeah.
Onto the front straightaway.
Yeah.
You don't go up on the banking. You stay down by the white line.
That was worse. That's where it did it.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it did.
You stay down by the white line, and after you cross the start-finish line, you merge up towards the wall. And the reason is simple. The front straight at Auto Club Speedway is not a straightaway. It's a big curve.
Right.
And so if you go up to the wall early, now the curve you're traveling is longer, and you have to go significantly farther. Plus,
if
you're climbing the banking when you're going slower, then you will be later.
But
so it costs you more to climb the banking earlier.
But if you hit that transition at a less oblique angle, less head shake. And that's what my sphincter was telling me.
Let's fix. Next time your bike is handling poorly or having any problems at the track, tell me when we're there so I can help you.
That sounds great.
Not 2 weeks later.
But you needed to know what... who cares? We were having fun. Anyway, my point was... with Sam, he was at Auto Club Speedway, and we were talking, and I did the interview with him, and then I punched his name into Google, and he's got an on-bike camera from his race. He came from like eighth in the field to win a superbike race at Fontana, okay? And I looked at the onboard, and the bike looked terrifying, okay? Way too stiff. The thing is bouncing all over the
place.
Well,
you're looking at it through the camera that's mounted, however.
Right. And no, we actually had a chat about it. Anyway, I talked. That's the point. That's what I'm getting to. He's like, the suspension was wrong. So, and this is the part I think you'll appreciate. He said, I sat down before the race and said, here's what I have to race with today. I can outbrake anybody, and I can outturn anybody. So, you're watching the bikes in front of him from the onboard footage. You're watching him make up crazy time on the brakes. And you're watching him be like a zero inside a P51, turning inside the radius of the other guy's turns. And I just thought that was really cool, the racer mindset, which was to not focus on all the things that were wrong with the bike.
Well, that's not the normal racer mindset.
And that's why we're talking.
The example that you just gave of you scaring yourself with the wobbles.
Yeah, so
focusing on it instead of doing what this guy done.
No, I focused on where the bike handled well. Okay, but my point is, this is what he did. He sat down and said, "Here's what I've got." And the quote was spectacular. He says, "This is what I've got to race with today, and that's what I'm going to make work." And it was brilliant. It was just that mindset of, okay, I can't fix the bad stuff. I'm not going to tweak on it. I'm going to focus on the good stuff, and we'll go from there. And I thought that was worth a shout out because, you know, the guy, in addition to not building a superbike grenade, he also used another great phrase, superbiking yourself out of contention, which is building a bike that just flat doesn't work because you've improved it so much.
Yep.
Stock bike, this is what I got to race with today. I'm going to turn these to my advantage, and it worked. I thought that was really cool as a lesson for everybody who races bikes to do
that.
You
know the thing about infinity?
It goes on forever.
It's everywhere.
No.
That's, aloha.
That's omnipresence. He's Ed Sorbo.
He's Michael Gugis.
Aloha.